accession number 26852, Real 8.
And he had a
Mr. Coop, Real 8. Now, any other stories you've got of your time at Fenling Camp?
Well, I remember a man used to come around called the Tiwala. He was Indian. And he had a couple of young Chinese boys who were twins that came with him, and they served tea and sold you sandwiches and things like that. And I got quite close to him. And I suppose it was a pleasure to be able to talk to somebody who could ask questions. And I think I learned an enormous amount about theology.
In what way? Tell us
because the conversations there, he would tell me about Indian religions. And I knew little of this. I had been in a Hindu temple on the way out to Korea when we stopped off at Ceylon. And I'd not really understood the nature of the imagery that I'd been looking at or the characters that these people had built. And it was a great eye-opener to me to listen to this man, and he was a good teacher.
And were you developing interest in the actual religion as a religion or as a cultural thing?
Well, it started as a cultural thing, but I'm a Buddhist now. And I think it was probably from talking to this guy that I began to find
I
ways.
I thought he was Hindu.
He was. It didn't make any difference. He knew, and he had a wide, extensive... I mean, his sons were in Cambridge studying mathematics, and one of them was becoming a doctor, and he was supporting them through his ministrations to soldiers in Fanling. And he was a fascinating man. And I don't know why, but I've always been very lucky throughout the whole of my life, because I've met so many different people who have been influential in directing the way you think and assessing your experiences. And he has to ask me the most extraordinary daft questions, at least I thought they were daft at the time. Like, if a raindrop hits you on your head, are you a raindrop? Well, I mean, that's Spike Milligan stuff, as far as I was concerned. But then he began to say things like, well, suppose it's not a raindrop, supposing it's a thought. If a thought hits you, is it you? Silly question. But an interesting answer. Because you then begin to question for yourself and to observe the nature of yourself. So a lot of my present understandings came from that encounter.
Was it considered within the unit unusual to have such a friendship with an Indian?
Yes,
the
yes, yes, yes. It was frowned upon in many cases.
Now, what besides the band dues, which unless you've got any particular stories, are pretty well the same, I would imagine.
Yes.
Were there any other duties you were given while you were at Fanling, as the band or as an individual?
Not that I can think of. Oh, yes, I suppose it was. I was put in charge for a while of training band boys.
Tell us about that.
Well, these were young men who had joined the army at a very as boys. There weren't many of them, but they were required a mature personality to oversee them. And Jack, a friend of mine, I was very fond of, and I got that job.
And how did you set about? I mean, were you training them musically? Or
yes, and militarily. It went on when I got back to England a while later, I was in the same.
So how did you set about it?
Just got them to play and talked about it, gave them exercises. The general sort of thing you'd do to teach anybody a technique. I suppose the medium of our trying to transmit values to them within the practice of the instrument. And being available to answer questions and bully them, because they were bullied. We'd been bullied, so we bullied. You handed it on. You didn't even realize
you did. In what
way? Shouting. No brutality of kicking or punching, the sort of thing I'd received. But certainly very strict discipline. You will do this, or don't bother to ask why, we'll tell you later. No, there's not the reason why. Just do or bloody or die. But using that to extend them, thinking into other quarters.
Now, do you think that they appreciated your effort to train them, or do you think they thought, didn't think much of you, you know?
Don't think they thought much of us. I mean, they'd have been bloody daft if they had thought. But I like to think that perhaps now, as men looking back, they might have got some value from it.
Now, what about your relationship with, I mean, the Hong Kong civilians? I mean, did you get out in Hong Kong much? Did you see much of the civilians?
We did get out in Hong Kong quite a bit. And
so what would you do?
We'd wander around the shops and the various places and act as tourists, I suppose. Found a lovely Russian restaurant there. Was the first time I met Borscht. The beautiful beetroot soup. The food was magnificent. And very different from Japan. It was much more of a commercial place. Brutal in many places. Not a place I would choose to stay. Fanling itself was the first place I ever seen that saw a Chinese opera, which went on for something like 48 hours non-stop, with bangs and clangs and wallops and whatever it was.
You didn't enjoy that, then?
I didn't understand it. It was most amusing. But
anything else? What are the recreations? Sport or anything?
We didn't do much sport. We played hockey. Because a lot of the guys in the band had come from the Indian Army. And I'd always thought of hockey as being a girl's stuff. You know, you play hockey on bloody concrete or on tarmac, and it's hard. It's a very, very hard game. So we played quite a bit of that. And some of the guys in the band became part of the team and went over to Malaya, where they played at Kuala Lumpur and places like that.
Now, anything else about those months there?
I remember the regiment opposite us in Queen's Hill Camp was one of the, I think it was the Royal, I can't remember which regiment it was. Oh, the Liverpool regiment.
King's Liverpool.
King's Liverpool. And they had done some pretty rough things to the Hong Kong population. They killed a few people, kicked them to death, I think. And they were under punishment. They were sent back to England on a punishment boat. Their officers and NCOs were removed and replaced by military police. So we were told they landed on British soil, paraded for 2 hours, put back on the boat, went to Malaya. It was a punishment. What they'd actually done, I don't know, but it was. That was the rumours.
Now, how about you? When you went home, did you go home with a regiment, or did you go home as a draft?
I went home by myself.
What do you remember the trip? Well, anything. There's nothing else. that happened in Hong Kong before that, is that?
There might have been, but I can't remember anything at the moment.
Fair enough. When you came to the end, was there any party when you left the unit? Because you were leaving your old friends.
Only the drunken groups that we organise ourselves. I think I went back entirely on my own. I was the only one that went back on my lot. I went back on the Windrush. The Windrush went back before I went. That's right. And it sunk in the Mediterranean. Famous.
So what were you on? Do you remember the name or?
I can't remember it. The Empire something.
And this was around about April, May 1955.
That's right.
Looks like April from the.
Went back to Litchfield Barracks. Well, we were considered to be a bad influence on the rest of the troops.
Why was that?
Well, because we didn't take any shit, as we said, from the NCOs. And there was a number of occasions when these young NCOs who had been in barracks and never done the sort of things that we did, who would try to produce the strict military discipline that they required, and they would take them on the back and kick the shit out of them. So we were sent home for a while.
Sent where?
Sent home. I was actually arrested on Waterloo Station by MPs for desertion.
Well, tell us that story.
Well, we were being demobbed, but they had organised it properly, so we hadn't our civilian suits. So all badges of rank and all badges of allegiance were removed from our uniform. The North Staffords motto was taken off our shoulders, hat badges were removed, all military insignia were stripped from the uniform. So technically we were civilians wearing battle dress, but not military. But the bloody MPs on Waterloo Station wouldn't have that. So I was whipped away and shoved in the cells for about 2 days, or with a period anyway. Which means that I lost my connection to Wilts, to Salisbury, or wherever I was going to get my civvies. And I was laid home. Oh, I forgot that. The buggers wouldn't let me out.
And
desertion, could you believe it?
Now, but they found out eventually.
Oh, yes. They didn't apologise. They just kicked us out. Now, at least I wonder if I should go back and sue them even now.
Now, so when you got home, mm-hmm. What were you going to do? I mean, where did you go back to live?
I went back to live with my mother and father in Exeter. My mother had just discovered that my father had a severe heart attack. And I'd been auditioned, and I think it was for Giraldo Agencies. And I expected to be offered a job on the cross-Atlantic ships like the Ile de France, where I could make a good living as a competent musician playing in the ship's orchestra. But unfortunately, things didn't work out like that.
Why not?
Well, for family reasons, I decided I had to stay at home, look after my mother.
So you abandoned the idea of a career as a musician?
Yeah, for a while. But then my dog got killed by somebody else's dog, who felt so guilty that he had to come and talk to me about it. And he turned out to be a lecturer at the local training college for teachers. And he was one of those people that influenced my life again, a man called Malcolm Freegard, who introduced me to Chaucer. I'd never come across Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. And he would sit to me in the evening and we would read. He would read. And he encouraged me to take the work that I'd done with the Army Education Corps and go for teacher training. So I went in to train as a music teacher at St. Luke's College after serving for about 18 months, 2 years, back at my old trade of making spectacles. Now they altered by this time, because instead of being a tradesman, you become a member of a team in a factory, doing one little job to produce a...
So you were inspired by this chap who you met purely because of this accident to
your dog,
to become a teacher?
Yeah.
And that was to be your career?
It was, indeed.
And you then all went on to be a university and the rest of it, you know, you put that down to him. Can you just talk a little about the effects your military service had on you, do you think?
Yes.
Good or bad, mentally and physically?
It's difficult to do this. Spiritually, it could have been killing. If you had allowed the brutality of training to pervert your natural sense of justice. I took the view that it allowed me to act at moments of enormous military strength, if it was going to be, automatically, when necessary, but that I had to retain an awareness to protect my own humanity, which I think is what most men who went through that kind of... Some of them had it worse than me. It's very easy to lose your personality, your ability to feel for others, your ability to feel guilt, your ability to feel ashamed, which are necessary to be fully human thinking person. It's easy to lose that. I think the American army tried to drive that out of people.
But you retained it.
Yes, I think so.
But the second point that I've noticed is that it seems to expose you to a fair number of influences.
Yes.
Do you think this was important in your makeup?
Yes, I do. Eclectic. The ability to see things in a context. And the army did a lot for me in that. Or I was able to make use of it in certain ways. And certainly when it came to teaching, when I went to college, of course, for the first time, I was an old soldier going in to train as a teacher, which I should have done years and years ago instead of being in the army. But at the same time as I was going in there, so the whole age group was changing and the young men were coming who had never been in the army. And so the college was having to impose a discipline on them. But they tried to impose the same discipline on us, which was very amusing. I mean, I was training with a guy who had been an ex-sergeant major in the Guards Regiment. And some of these young lecturers were trying to tell him what to do. And they couldn't do it.
But I mean, without the army, do you think you'd have had the influence like from the Indian servant or the influence
No, no, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. So I can't see how I could have got those experiences in any other way.
Had it done you any harm? You say you protected yourself from the worst of, you know, the personality changing element of discipline. Mm. Had it done you any harm in any physical way or any other mental way that you think that you're aware of?
Not physically, but mentally, yes, I think occasionally.
In what ways? What bad things did it do mentally?
If I wasn't aware of it, sometimes I would be hurtful to people. As NCOs have been hurtful to me. I think I've been hurtful to my own kids from time to time. Demanding standards and ways of thinking which were not appropriate. Which at the time I was convinced was right. And I think I did that to Toby, to be honest.
And you think that there's that harshness has been placed into your personality by the training you got, or released anyway?
Yeah. And partially due to the fact that I was a wartime person, and I'd seen my house blown up and detected the brutality that was necessary to survive in those days.
Thank you very much.